Welcome to Books on Air, the show that tells the story behind the book. I'm Suzanne Harris, and I'll talk to the author about their latest project. We'll also tell you where you can find them on social media, and perhaps we'll even give you the opportunity to meet them. My guest today is an absolutely fascinating woman. Her name is Susan Savion, and she's here to talk about her latest book, Quoting Matilda, The Words and History of a Forgotten Suffragist. Welcome, Susan.
Hello. So glad to be here.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I can't wait for us to talk about your book. It's so interesting. One of the things that I always like to do is to give the author a chance to introduce themselves to our listeners, because they want to know you. So what would you like to say to our listeners about yourself?
Well, I feel sometimes as if I've lived three or four lifetimes in one. I've had so many different twists and changes in my life. But I grew up on a farm in rural southern Illinois, dairy farm, grain farm, all of that, and was pretty isolated. So I did a lot of reading growing up, and that was a first love, and eventually arrived here in Syracuse, New York. And I was a teacher for 42 years before I retired a few years ago, and had the opportunity to teach every level from kindergarten, grade school, high school, college and adults. And the last gig that I had was inner city Syracuse, working with middle school kids. So I wrote some books that would be teacher resources from them, and from that led to this book.
Well, this is such an interesting book, and I want to get one thing out of the way before we really talk about the book. I know that our listeners heard me use in the title the word suffragist, and I know they're sitting there thinking, no, no, the word is suffragette. Let's talk about the difference between the two words.
Well, there is a difference, and Sally Roche Wagner, who is the person who did her doctorate on Matilda after she discovered her, this forgotten person. She was an expert, started women's history courses, and would be very unhappy if I didn't get this straight for the audience. Suffragists were from the era with Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Gage, the 1800s. The suffragettes came a little bit later, and they were a little louder and stronger and did a little property damage and other things to bring attention to themselves, and probably the ones that you read about that were also brutalized more as well. They were more after the 1900s.
Now, we're really talking about a suffragist who our audience will probably say, who? When we mention her name, it's Matilda Jocelyn Gage. And she was a contemporary of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. Tell me how you found out about her and what prompted you to write a book about her.
Well, I had never heard of her before I moved to Syracuse, and I don't even quite remember the first inkling of it. I think I was visiting a library, and they had a display of Wizard of Oz books. I'll get to more about that later, but she was also the mother-in-law of L. Frank Baum, who wrote the Wizard of Oz books, and that led me to learning that there was this woman in town that was interested in buying the house where she lived and renovating it. So I got involved. They were looking for volunteers, and I would help there. The first thing that I did was there were Girl Scouts coming. Half the Girl Scouts stayed in the house, and I showed them what a tea would be like in the era that Matilda lived, and the other half went out to the Onondaga Nation about 8 miles away and met with the Native American women, what would have been typical for them at that time, and then halfway through the day they switched. And so from then I've been fascinated in this woman, and It's a little bit of a long story. Maybe you can ask me some more questions, which just connects to what I was teaching at the time and how it led to this.
Let's do an overview of the book, because you have focused on her, and you focused on her contributions and what she did. So you mentioned, when you and I were talking prior to my beginning to record the interview, that the house is divided into five areas. I'm assuming that the book probably follows a similar pattern. Is that right?
Not quite. There are more areas covered in mine, and it is not arranged chronologically, but topically. And it has areas on quotes on women's rights, on getting the vote, on slavery, on the Haudenosaunee, which are the Iroquois, the Native American people, on the tactics that the women used to get the vote and other things, on how they financed this, on reproductive rights and on morality, and on, she had plenty to say about religion, because her magnum opus, a book she wrote late in life, was called Woman, Church, and State, and she took on the role of women in religious institutions. And then she had some quotes on death and on getting old and on ancestors and on freedom. And there's an especially important quote that's on the last page that's inscribed on her tombstone in Fayetteville, where she lived. Fayetteville is only a few miles outside of Syracuse, and that's where her home is, that has been turned into this award-winning interactive museum. But the quote says, "There's a word sweeter than mother, home, or heaven. That word is liberty." So all those areas of her life are covered, but it's broken down even further.
You know, she was really considered to be so radical that that's one of the reasons that we don't know who she is.
She was purposely written out of history. There's some that people that I'm discovering, for instance, Reverend Germain Logan. He wasn't purposely written out of history, but not many people remember him. He's mentioned in the book because he was a contemporary, and Syracuse is famous for the Jerry Rescue. Logan was this escaped slave that became a Baptist minister and helped rescue at least 1,500 slaves through Syracuse and was known as the King of the Underground Railroad. But in Gage's case, it was a little dirty politics, and she wasn't the only one that was pushed to the curb, but was the one that was mostly obliterated. I read biographies of Stanton and other suffragists at the time, and I know the events that are mentioned, that Gage was right there with them, and yet she isn't mentioned at all sometimes, and just a name other times. Yet they worked together in each other's houses for over 40 years. They wrote together the first three volumes of the history of women's suffrage.
It's amazing.
They supported each other. Gage wrote a lot of speeches for Anthony that she didn't get credit for, and on it goes.
How did you do your research? If she's left out of so many facets of the suffrage movement, how were you able to do your research? And there are pictures that are in the book. How were you able to get hold of those?
Yes, there's about 30-some pictures in the book. What I learned from doing this, that most pictures taken before 1923 are public domain, but you still have to prove it. And in one case, I wanted to use this pretty picture of some British suffragettes that was on this pretty napkin. And I discovered after many months that the picture was okay to use, but I couldn't use the picture of it on the napkin because that had a copyright. So I ran into things like that. Syracuse University has a lot of her things in a special room that they have. Also, in the Fayetteville Library, By the way, her book was banned in Fayetteville when it came out. It was so radical. But they have a special room also where some things that aren't widely in print, they're not in book form, but you can check them out for a few days and learn some primary resources for people that did special papers on her. And then there's Sally Roche Wagner, who really is connected with the letters, the diaries. There's a little interesting story about her. She's was this person I mentioned that was a leading feminist and began women's programs. And she was at a writing conference or something. She met this young lady who mentioned this aunt of hers that had been a suffragist. And Sally was very upset. How come I don't know about her? I'm supposed to be the person that knows about all those things. Well, the young lady took her to a room filled with memorabilia of hers. Even though they could erase her name from books that they were writing, there were letters and there were diaries and there were newspaper articles that they had saved. And from then, she moved all the way from out west to Syracuse, ended up buying the house, ended up turning it into a museum. And she's a valuable resource for this, too.
What a treasure trove of information to stumble onto. I mean, I think that's just marvelous. Let's go back and talk about the Frank Baum connection, because I think that is so interesting that there is a direct connection with the man who wrote The Wizard of Oz.
It is very fascinating, because the more I learn about it and I read the books and see the influence of Matilda Joslyn Gage. Gage's youngest daughter, Maud, was studying at Cornell University, her first or second year there. And from what I've read, Gage was one of the people, along with Dr. Samuel May, that protested or influenced the people at Cornell to allow women to attend. Because when Matilda's father wanted to send her to medical school, he was a doctor himself, and she was so bright, they wouldn't allow women. So this next generation, can you imagine when Maud comes home and says she has something to tell her, and Frank Baum is with her, L. Frank Baum, and she tells her mother that she wants to marry this man. He was an itinerant actor. He couldn't keep a steady job. He was a few years older. Oh my gosh, no!
Your worst nightmare.
And she had a bit of a fit, but Maud reminded her that, mother, just like you were taught, you told me to think for myself and make decisions for myself. Anyway, she, after a little while, convinced her mother to try to get to know this person, and actually they ended up living, they got married in the parlor of the house in Fayetteville that's now the museum. It's turned into the Oz Museum, Oz Room now. There's actually the piano that was there and the sheet music for Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You can sit right down at the piano and play it. But that's where they got married, and then they lived with Maud and her husband for a number of years, and eventually moved to Chicago. And then when Matilda was elderly, she moved to Chicago, and that's where she died, living with them. But they strongly feel that the Good Witch Glinda was modeled after Matilda. She is the one that told him to start writing these stories that he was telling the kids down. And there's another little story that's not in the book. I'll share it with you. The rumor is that he was sitting in the parlor telling the story about this place, and one of the kids asked, well, what's the name of this place? And he hadn't even named it yet. But he glances over to a file cabinet, and the bottom drawer says O to Z. So he says, Oz.
No!
And Dorothy was the favorite niece of Maud, who died when she was only about 18 months old, something like that. And so they named the main character Dorothy. But there's actually 14 Oz books. Sometimes people don't even know there's books, you know, the one that the original movie was based on. By the way, in the original books, the slippers were silver and not ruby. But by the third book of this Oz series, Oz has been turned into a matriarch. And Oz is very clever in how he shows these women being very successful, where the wizard and all these male characters were not. And if you look at the Tin Man and the Straw Man, and the strong characters in that book, whether they're witches or good people, were the women.
Amazing. I think that is such a fascinating connection. And who would ever think we're talking about a suffragist, Matilda Joslyn Gage, and who would ever connect her with Glinda the Good Witch and the Wizard of Oz? Susan, I just think that is fascinating. Now, you also, in addition to the book, I believe you told me that you've written a screenplay about her.
Yes, that's just gotten to fruition. A few weeks ago, I got it finished. So when I was approached about the possibility of that, I hadn't thought about it, but I wrote this book because I want the world to know about this amazing woman. And in my book, I have quotes on each page, the way it's arranged, because she had so many wonderful, profound things to say. So I thought, yes, if there's so many aspects to her life and lots of drama in it, that would be great to have a movie, even if it's just for History Channel. So it is finished, and I'm hoping to find someone that's very interested in actually turning it into a movie. If you see the picture of Matilda on the front of my book, you will maybe think the way I do, and maybe think big, but, oh, Meryl Streep, perfect for the role.
You're already casting.
So we'll see.
I love it. Well, I know that we have piqued the interest of our listeners. Let's tell them where they can find the book. Now, I will always check on Amazon, and I did for your book as well. I just went straight to Amazon, and I put the name of the book in the book search feature, and the specific name of the book is Quoting Matilda, The Words and History of a Forgotten Suffragist. And the author's name is Susan, S-U-S-A-N, Savion, S-A-V-I-O-N. Just put that in the feature, and I clicked right on it, and the book came up, and it's available in hardback, it's available in paperback, and I believe on Kindle. Am I right?
That's right.
Where else could they find it besides Amazon, Susan?
Well, through the Barnes & Noble website and a lot of places around Syracuse, and actually in Seneca Falls, the museums at Seneca Falls where all this history started. Matilda didn't get to that very first meeting of the women in Seneca Falls. She was a young mother with children, young children at the time, but she got to the third one in Syracuse that was held several years later, and that's where she made her first speech. Besides those museums, it's at the Oz Museum in Chittenango. There's a bookstore there. Every year, if you're in upstate New York, you know about their yellow brick road, and the whole town is almost themed around L. Frank Baum, and they have a big parade and festival every year, the Oz Festival. It's there. It's at the Gage House, where the museum and the bookstore there is pretty much featured there. The docents that are training to give people tours like to read it because it's a good snapshot pictures of facts and things about her that help them a lot. I wrote it as a gift book. It doesn't fit neatly into any particular genre because it does make a perfect gift for the women in your life and sisters and daughters and others. And also it's a graduation present, something like that. But it's one of these books that you can pick up and put down easily and come away with these strong little tidbits of information about her. It's located at the Historical Museum, Historical Society in Syracuse, and Scannon Center, which was formerly a place called St. Marie Among the Iroquois, but the Native Americans got a big grant and have turned it into a wonderful museum along the shores of Onondaga Lake, where they've lived for thousands of years.
Now, it's also going to be featured at Book Expo America in New York. That's going to be held at the end of May and the 1st of June. Now, will you be there at the expo?
I will be there, yes. I'm very excited to go.
So if somebody got a copy of the book, either there or if they brought it with them, they'd have an opportunity to meet you.
Meet me, and I would gladly sign it to them.
How will they be able to find out where you are and when you're going to be there?
Going to be there all 3 days. I might not be there early in the morning because I'm planning to take the train from Syracuse. It's at the Litfire booth.
So if they just...
They'll have a map showing where these different places are.
I think there's one, if they go to the Book Expo America website, there's already some information up about who's going to be there, and there's a map, I think, already of the floor.
Yes,
so they could do a little exploration before they come to the event.
You could even get a map, or an app on your phone to with all the information of who's speaking when, who's signing when, and where every booth is. I found it very handy when I went to the American Library Association conference in Atlanta in January and last year in Chicago, a book expo. So they have all these great helps to find our way around now.
Well, you've done some other books in addition to this one, and I know you have a website. So if our listeners want to find your website, where would they look?
Well, it's pretty easy, www.quotingmatilda.com. And the book's for sale there. There's a larger biography about me, things, little tidbits like I used to be a gymnastics judge because my daughters were gymnasts, and some paintings and other things that I do. But there's also a blog there. I was encouraged to do that, and I first thought it was but it's late already, but I've really gotten into it because there's so many connections that are happening right now in what's going on in our country with government and women's rights and other issues and people around the world that connect to things that were important to Matilda. When I started, they asked me to, pick 12 topics that you want to write about for the first 12. And I did. But I can't write about that. I have to write about the Women's March. I have to write about other things that are going on right now. And so it's pretty contemporary.
It's amazing how history from what appears to be that long ago is contemporary and connects to today. And you're going ahead and doing some other things with some of the other forms of social media. I believe you're doing Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, am I right?
Yes, and Goodreads, some things mentioned there. I've gotten to use Twitter pretty much lately. I hadn't at first, but there's a presence, yes.
Susan, you are so interesting. You and I could sit here and talk for a very long time. I'm afraid that our time is up, and it has been an absolute delight to talk with you and to hear your excitement and your enthusiasm about not only this person, but about history in general. So thank you so much for being our guest today on Books on Air.
Oh, thank you, too. There's so much more I would love to say. I hope people have a chance to learn about this amazing woman.
Me, too, because I think she is so interesting.
Oh, and I didn't even mention the Haudenosaunee women's, the Indian. I just got to throw that in. The influence of the Iroquois Indian women was so strong that led to these rites. So that's another tease. I will end.
There's so much, isn't there? There's just so much. Thank you again, Susan.
Thank you.
Samuel Johnson said, "A writer begins a book. A reader finishes it. I hope that you'll join me for the next Books on Air. And until then, buy a book, read a book, share a book. And thank you so much for listening.